At the very end of Parshat Yitro, it says, V'im mizbach avonim ta'aseh li. And when you will make an altar of stone for me, lo tivne et hen gazit, do not build them hewn, ki char becho heinafto aleho vatechal aleho. Because you have placed your sword upon it, and you have therefore desecrated it and defiled it. Rashi says, you have the Rashi immediately below there, gazit, hewn, lishon gaziza, an expression of cutting. Sheposlon umisateton bevarzel, cutting stones to a particular size and shape by using metal, that is gazit. Now, for the stones that I used for the mizbeach, the altar in the Mishkan and the Bet HaMikdash, you can't cut the stones with metal. Kichar b'chohi nafto el ha'o, lest you wave your sword over it, hadei ki ze mishamish b'loshon pen, the word ki means lest, or maybe, pen taner, God forbid that you should place your sword upon it. V'techal aleha, in other words, you're going to have to find a different way to hew those stones. You can't do it with metal. V'techal aleha, and you have defiled it holamadita, so you learn from this that if you raised or waved iron over it, you have desecrated that stone and it cannot be used for the mizbeach. And Rashi says, one pshat, the mizbeach was created in order to lengthen man's life, and metal is that which shortens the life of man. It's not right that one should use that which in a sense is an implement of death. Use that in order to create a mizbeach, which is made in order to give life. And further, Rashi says, "Shamizbeach matil shalom ben Yisrael la'aviyem shabashamayim." The mizbeach is that which brings peace between Israel and their father in heaven. Lefichach lo yavay olav koreitu mechabel. You cannot use that which cuts and injures. Varei dvorim kal vechome umaravanim sheinon root v'lo shomot v'lo medabrot. Rashi makes a kal vechome. Take a look. If stones that don't see, they don't hear, they don't speak, al yedei shematilot shalom, because they bring peace between God and the Jewish people, on the Torah said, lo tonif aleihem barzel, you shall not bring metal upon them. Hamatul shalom bein ish liishto, bein mishpacha lemishpacha, bein odom lachavera. Can you imagine how great will be the reward for a person who brings peace between man and his wife, between family and family, between men and fellow men? Al achas kama v'kama shalot vo ehu put on us. Certainly a person of that sort who brings peace and comfort and tranquility between fellow human beings, certainly no punishment will befall him. All right. It's a beautiful Rashi. It's a beautiful halacha. In other words, there's a very clear statement that is being made over here. The statement, of course, that Chazal are telling us, Torah is telling us this. The statement that's being made is that war is an evil. It is certainly at times an absolutely necessary evil, but it's not something that we revel in. It's not something, we're not occupiers, we are not troops who bring death and destruction. We do have a right. At least we believe so. Not everybody in the world believes so, but we certainly believe that we have the right to defend ourselves. Self-defense applies not only to the rest of the world, it applies to us as well. But here's a clear, beautiful statement made in the parasha in which Torah is given to the Jewish people, that we know the destructive force of metal, and this is something that is rejected. You can't make a mizbeach with metal. I want to take this halacha and demonstrate something else through this halacha, which will give me the opportunity to say everything that I want to say in the rest of this year.
what would happen in the event, and it may even be so, I don't know, what happened in the event that a stone or stones that are prepared for use in the Mizbeach are infinitely more beautiful if they are cut with metal? If you're not going to cut it with metal, so, you know, it'll be like an altar balata. But if you cut it with metal, it's going to be absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And the Torah rejects it, though it is beautiful. You know what statement the Torah is making? The Torah is saying that beauty is not merely in the eyes of the beholder. In order to understand and appreciate beauty, you have to go beyond the skin and beyond the surface. It may look beautiful. What a beautiful stone. Gorgeous stone. But it can't be used for the Mizbeach. Because Torah has its own definition of what's art. The Torah has its own definition of what is beauty. And that's the subject of the shiur. I'm going to be borrowing at certain times during the course of the shiur from an essay, a shiur that was said many years ago by Rav Soloveitchik, and a number of his ideas are going to be incorporated in this shiur. He says that the human being is naturally drawn to beauty. We're more than fascinated by beauty. We're enchanted by it. Who doesn't like to see beautiful flowers? Symmetrical images. All sorts of colors that blend together. Beautiful human beings. A child. From where I live in Har Nof, most probably everybody has some kind of a magnificent view. You see sunrise and sunset day in and day out. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And each one of us, where I hope most of you, wherever you live, you have some kind of a view. This is a city of views. There's absolute beauty. A sunrise, a sunset. We're enchanted. We're absolutely enchanted. We're all engaged by beauty that's around us. In modern man, this sense of an appreciation of beauty is very highly developed. The Gemara even says it. Gemara says, "Ishon noe, diron noe, vekelim noim, marchivin dato shel adam." Beautiful woman, a beautiful apartment, beautiful furniture. They give a sense of breath to a human being. You come into an apartment or a living room that is tastefully appointed. There's a good feeling, a very, very good feeling. There's something about beauty that not only engages, but that there's an appreciation and there's a sense of well-being that is the result of beauty. We're impressed. We're impressed, and it's something to be impressed about. A tastefully organized and a decorated home. The eye can become intoxicated by beauty. And here, of course, is where the problem comes in. The intoxication with beauty can be something very positive, and it can also be something extremely negative. And Torah was very well aware of it. Vateira ha'isha chava. The woman saw, ki tov ha'etz lemachol, that tree is good for eating. V'chitavohi le'inayim. It's absolutely beautiful. Lust for the eyes. She sees the Eitz Hadat and she's drawn to it. There's absolute beauty. And of course, that beauty brought her to man's first sin. At the end of Parashat Bereshit, it says, "By Yiru b'nei ha'Elohim et b'nos ha'adam, the sons of God, which really means, of course, most of the first year, it means the people of significance and importance. They saw Benos Ha'odom, the daughters of men, Ki Tovos Heino, that they are good. Vayikulhem Noshimi Kol Asher Bachoru, they took women from all that they chose. The eye was intoxicated and drawn magnetically by beauty. But it's also used to describe God Himself. Hod v'hodol avashta in Tehillim. Hod v'hodol avashta. O te'or kasalma. No te'shamayim kayiria. There's beauty and brilliance that surrounds God. Of course, it's probably one of the most significant expressions of what beauty means to us is in number 2, last week's Sedra. And here is a pasuk and a statement of Chazal that I've spoken about a number of times, that I'm going to speak about it today in a completely different context. Zekeli va'amvehu elokei ovi va'aromemenu. In the Shira we say that as Jews stood at the Red Sea together with Moshe, they sang, "This is my God, and I will beautify him. Elokei Ovi, the God of my father, Varo Emenu, and I will exalt him." We have two statements of the rabbis. The first statement of the rabbis is the halacha of Hidur Mitzvah, the halacha that a mitzvah should be beautified. Tanya, we learned, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Minayin Ata Omer, So first of all, the Gemara says you should know that what was seen at the Yam Suf, a maidservant at the Yam Suf saw even more than Yechezkel Hanavi saw. That Zekeli, this is my God, they were able to point, they saw him. Va'anvehu. The key word is va'anvehu. Tanya, we learned Zekeli va'anvehu. Hitna'el lefanav b'mitzvot, be beautiful before him with mitzvot. Asei lefon of sukkah noah, make a beautiful sukkah. Lulav noah, beautiful lulav. Tzitzit na'im, a beautiful talus. Sefer Torah na'eh, a beautiful Sefer Torah. Uktov bo lishmo, and write it for his name's sake, for God's name's sake. Bidyo na'eh, with beautiful ink. Ubekulmus na'eh, and with a beautiful quill, a beautiful pen, Blavlar Uman, a sofer who is an artist, the Korcho Bishiroyim Noyim, and you wrap it with beautiful wrappings around the Sefer Torah. And what's interesting over here, there's one word that grabs me. In this entire description, we're talking about the physical beauty of the objects. Beautiful Sefer Torah, beautiful tefillin, tzitzis, sukkah. There's one word that seems to be out of place over here. And that is, uchtov, write the Sefer Torah, lishmo, for God's name. You know what that means? What happens if the most artistic sofer in the world wrote a Sefer Torah, but didn't have in mind lishmo? Do you know how we look at this piece of art, this beauty? It's a puzzle. It's a garnished. It most probably doesn't even have kedusha to begin with. It's not even sanctified. There's nothing. A Sefer Torah that was written lishmo and may not be that beautiful, and then it becomes puzzle, has the kedusha of a Sefer Torah, and has to be dealt with the greatest of sanctity. You don't just throw it out. You bury it. It has the sanctity of the human body. But if it wasn't written lishma, it's nothing. It may be beautiful, but it's absolutely nothing. In that one word, lishmo, the Gemara is giving us a description of art. Art is not merely in the eyes of the beholder. For art to be art, according to Torah, there must be an inner meaning and an inner significance that's beautiful. And I think to bring this point home even further, the next statement of the rabbis. Abba Shaul Omer. An amazing statement. Abba Shaul Omer. Abba Shaul says, Ze keli van veu, this is my God, and I will make him beautiful. Heve domelo, be like God. Mahu chanun v'rachum, just as he is kind and merciful. Af ata haye chanun v'rachum, you too should be kind and merciful. Big question that has to be asked on Abba Shaul, and some of the Mefarshim ask the question. Abba Shaul says, you should be like God. All right? By the way, how does he learn it? The word anvehu, he learns it as reading ani vahu, I and he, me and God, the same. So I have a question. Does Abba Shaul not hold that there's a mitzvah to have a beautiful lulav, a beautiful Sefer Torah, a beautiful pair of tefillin? If he uses v'anvehu to tell me that the human being has to be beautiful, then he doesn't have a pasuk to tell us that you need to have a beautiful mitzvah. Is he opposed to the halacha of a beautiful mitzvah? So I say no. You know what Abba Shaul is telling us? And I like to use, in order to explain this, I like to use brisker terminology. In the performance of every mitzvah, there is a chefza, an object, and there is a gavra, the person who fulfills the mitzvah. Abba Shaul says, a perfectly beautiful mitzvah can only be accomplished if both the chefza and the gavra are beautiful. The lulav and the esrig is beautiful, and the human being is a beautiful human being. Can you imagine a fella who's a ganef, a drug dealer, comes into shul, circus in the morning, mit de schenste lulav en esrig that you ever saw. Do you understand? And Masali has a big talus with a big gorgeous silver atara on top. And he comes in. Is that a beautiful mitzvah? Is that a beautiful mitzvah? How many people did he rob and cheat in order to be able to buy the most beautiful lulav en esrig at all? You know what Abba Shaul is telling us? Abba Shaul says, of course you need a beautiful lulav en esrig. But the real fulfillment of the mitzvah is not merely when the chefza itself is beautiful. The gavra also has to be beautiful. The human being also has to be beautiful. This is a definition of art. This is a definition of art. Art that is the object alone, without taking into consideration the human being behind the object, is not art according to Torah. Simply is not art. It may even be considered ugly, regardless of how beautiful it looks to the eye of the beholder. Number three, in Parashat Ki Tisa, V'yidaber Hashem l'Moshe l'Emor, God spoke to Moshe saying, hey, take a look, Karasi b'shem, I've called him by name. You know who's going to build the Mishkan? You know who's going to be the artisan who will build the Mishkan? It's going to be Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Hur, L'mate Yehuda. V'amaleo to Ruach Elokim, I'm going to fill him with the Spirit of God. B'chochma, with wisdom, B'tvuna, with understanding, U'bedat, with knowledge, U'bechol malacha. Now, B'chol malacha, we might assume that art is the malacha, if you're an artist, the malacha is the malacha of an artist. Oh, no, it's not enough. You know what else goes into art? Ruach Elokim, Chachma, Tvuna, Da'at. And I'm going to give him this ability. Lachshov machshavot lasod bazov bakesef uvan choshet. The Gemara down below over there is going to explain that there's beauty in his name. Bezalel. But he was Bezalel. Moshe tells him how to make the Mishkan and the Aron, and he really tells them the Aron and the Mishkan, and Bezalel says, but wait a minute, we have to make the Mishkan first so that there will be a place for the Aron. And Moshe turns to him and says, Shemo Bezalel Kael Hayita, were you there in the shadow of God and knew exactly what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me? Bezalel talks about a man who has great divine inspiration. Ben Uri, he is a son of light. What he creates is an act of light, not darkness. Ben Hur, there's something that frees the human being by such beautiful art, the kind of art that a Bezalel can do. It means the person behind the art is as significant and as important as the art itself. You cannot separate the artisan from the work of art. That's a Torah approach. Let's turn over to the second side. I'm coming back to the Rav now. The Rav, in this essay, makes a very beautiful homiletic explanation of a parash in Torah. You will go out to war against your enemies, and God will give the enemy into your hands, the shavita shivyo, and you're going to capture captives. In that captivity, you will see eshet yifat Torah, a beautiful woman, and you're going to desire her. You will take her unto you as a wife. So the halacha tells us, you should bring her into your house. She should shave her hair. Let her nails grow long. She should take off the beautiful clothing that she wore before she was captured. The yoshuv beitecha, and she shall live in your house, ubachtet aviyav et imo yedach yomim, and she should cry for her father and her mother for a month. Va'achreichen, and only afterwards, tavo eleo, you will come to her, ubi'alto, and you live with her, v'italecha liisha, and she shall be unto you as a wife. So the halacha is, as it says over here, but the Rav sees it in another context as well. He says that when you're going to go out to war, or that is, when war is going to come your way. We didn't go out that much to war as war came our way. In the course of conflicts throughout history, you're going to come into contact with all sorts of foreign cultures. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Greece, Rome. And you're going to see beauty there, even this enemy. You're going to see beauty in their culture. You're going to find beautiful things there. You're coming into contact with them. You know what they're all about. You're beginning to learn about them. And there are parts of that culture that seem to be very, very attractive to you. You desire it. So the Torah says, be careful. Be very, very careful. Before you finally wed yourself to those dimensions of the culture that you find so beautiful, test it. Look at it carefully. Look at it very, very carefully. Because what it may be is no more than some kind of an outer layer of beauty, but from within, it's all rotten. It's all evil. It's all cruelty. But there's something around it, surrounds it, that makes it look so beautiful. Bring it into your house. Study it. Look at it carefully. Remove the outer layers. Take off the garments of her captivity. Let it sit. Look at it. Look at it. Study it. Test it. Only after you are certain that this is not absolute evil that is being packaged beautifully, only then can you leave it in your home. Only then can you adopt it. We were permitted There it was, there's the famous pasuk. I should have put it on the sheet, but it is Noach who tells his children, Yaft Elokim li Yefet, let God give beauty to Yefet, v'yishkon ba'ohalei Shem, and he shall dwell in the tents of shame. Greece came from Yefet. There's beauty in Yefet. And the Gemara learns from this that you are permitted to bring Yafyefuto shel Yefet, the beauty of Yefet, you can bring into the tents of shame. And there's a particular halacha that was important at a certain moment in time. The rabbis permitted Torah to be translated into Greek, because Greek is a beautiful language. And about that language, Torah said, the beauty of Yefet can dwell in the tents of shame. You can bring it in. Fine. There's another Gemara that says that though the beauty, Yaft Elokim li Yefet, the beauty of the nations of the world, you may have that beauty, you may use it, but God will only dwell in Ohalei Shem, in the tents of shame. The first Bet HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech, of course from the family of Shem, so there the Shechinah, the Divine Presence, dwelt there. The second Bet HaMikdash that already came, in a sense, from foreign sources, was Korash, Melech, Paras. There already the Divine Presence did not rest. But there is a concept of the beauty of Yefet in the tents, in the tents of shame. The Rav writes that in Tanakh, when we are told about the fact that there were Jews who worshipped idols, al kol givha givoha v'tachat kol eitz ra'anan, on the heights of every hill and beneath every fresh tree, beautiful tree, you worshipped idols. He says this description is in order to tell us that idol worshippers chose the most beautiful places in nature to establish their temples and their worship there. And he says the purpose of the surrounding beauty was in order to camouflage, to conceal and cover up the absolute ugliness, the promiscuousness, the depravity, the decay, the wickedness of idolatry. There it is. Oh, it looks so beautiful. Looks so, so beautiful. Beautiful temples, beautiful nature all around it. And it's all has one purpose, so that you don't see at first glance the ugliness of idolatry. Music. Music was used to silence the cries of children who are being sacrificed before the idols. Don't we know of commanders of concentration camps who listened to Beethoven and to Wagner as they shipped Jews to their deaths? So that external beauty is absolutely no guarantee that at its very heart and its very source, it is really, really beautiful. And in a sense, if we take a look at that, if we take a look again at that parasha of Noach, Yaft Elokim li Yefet, v'yishkon ba'olei Shem, over there it says, terrible curse to Cham. Oru Kenan. What does it say? It says that Noach planted a vineyard and grew grapes, made wine, he drank, he became intoxicated, and he's rolling in his tent and his body is revealed. Vayar Cham Avi Knan, Cham, the father of Knan, saw at Ervat Aviv the ugliness of his father. Vayaged l'shnei achav b'chutz, and he tells his two brothers outside, and they're horrified. What are you talking about? You see your father like this? Cover him up? No, no, no. Chacham doesn't want to cover up. It's then Shem and Yefet who walk in backwards with a blanket in order to cover the nakedness of their father. You know what Chacham is? You know what Chacham is? I think we're living at a particular moment in Jewish history when we can very well understand Chacham. I didn't always understand him, but I understand him now. There are those amongst us who revel absolutely enjoy displaying before the world the ugliness of the Jewish people. Even if they have to make it up. We're cruel. We're occupiers. Our soldiers are Filshanish Zogin. And not only that, we are also the ones who you're talking about, the atrocities that we have committed in the last 55 years. So the Eibishter upheaten. It's made up, but there's a certain joy, and it's, I've tried to understand it, and I always pride myself that I think I'm normal. By the way, most of us think we are, but I'm pretty much convinced that I'm normal, and I can't understand the irrational mind. I have difficulty understanding the irrational mind. I have difficulty understanding who it is that can have such great joy in attempting to tell the world, my people are ugly. Of course, the one thing that they gain by that is they seem to feel, I'm a good guy. The rest of them are the bad guys. If you're talking about dirty Jews, the rest of them are the dirty Jews. I am the good Jew. Chacham wants his father's ugliness to be seen. You think that Noach is ish tzaddik tomim hoyo b'dorotam? That's what you think about Noach. What a mistake you're making. You think Israel has the most humane army in the world that loses soldiers so that they shouldn't hurt civilians? Nonsense. That's the ugliness of Chacham on one hand. And therein, of course, in comparison, the beauty of Yefet is permitted to enter in to the portals of Shem. There's the famous story in Tanakh that carries so much great meaning to it. Story in Tanakh about Shimshon and Delilah. Samson and Delilah. He's captivated by her beauty. And she tries, because she is prodded by the Philistines. She tries to find out where is his strength great. And two or three times he doesn't tell her the truth. Tells her, if you're going to tie me up with all sorts of new cords that have never been used, my strength is gone. And then she ties him up. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the Philistines come in and he tears it apart. And then she begins, they tell me, you lied to me, you don't love me, Yeah. You know, she was able to do a job. Until finally he tells her the truth, and she knows it's the truth. Cut the locks of my hair, and my strength will be gone. And he falls asleep. And she cuts the locks of his hair. And then, when the Philistines come, his strength is gone. There are times that beauty sort of intoxicates us to the point that we fall asleep. We don't see what's going on around us. We're not fully aware of all of the dangers that lurk. In this essay, the Rav was talking about American Jewry. That in many areas, in many respects, American Jewry was intoxicated by the beauty of American life. The beauty of American life. And that idealism is gone. One sentence there I remember. He says, why shouldn't thousands of our young people go on Aliyah? The Rav says, how do you like that? He must have said it about 30 years ago, 40. Why don't thousands of our young people go on Aliyah? Where did the ga'aguim l'tzion, the yearning and the longing for tzion, which was a basic part of the emotional makeup of the Jewish people, where did it go? Where did it go? He says, it's Shimshon falling asleep on the lap of Delilah. Did beautiful buildings ever make a difference to us? In terms of Jewish education, we wanted a good Rebbe. A good Rebbe. Good Rebbe may be secondary. There may be money for beautiful buildings, but there aren't the salaries for the good Rebbe. We're sort of we've been blinded by aspects of beauty. Like I get upset, and certainly my wife always, every so often she just. We have somebody who told us that they can't come on Aliyah because the lifestyle. When my wife hears the word lifestyle, she goes, okay, what are you talking about? What can't you have here? What is there in your lifestyle that's so tremendous over there that you can't have over here? All right, there's a difference. Buses don't explode in America, but that's not what they have in mind. The lifestyle. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't know. We know already. We've talked about it. Anything you can want can get here. There's nothing as felt garnished in Eretz Israel. The only thing that's lacking, of course, is that there's absolutely no leadership. I'm not going to get into that. We're talking about art. And we're talking... Zekeli van Veil. So I'll tell you. What is it that has been in my kishgut these last few weeks? And I can sum up the Torah approach to art... Two magnificent lines in Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. It's a great poem. All the poems of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi are great, but one of the greatest, one of the great lines. V'al tashiach chochmas yevonis asher ein lo pri ki im prachim. Don't be seduced by Greek wisdom. It has no fruit. It only has flowers. What a beautiful line. Asher ein lo pri ki im prachim. There's no fruit. There's no substance. There's not something real over there. But there's beautiful prachim on the outside. Beautiful. Delilah-like prachim. That's what it is. But when you get to the heart of it, it's empty. It's full of decay and rot. There's nothing there that will last into eternity. So here, you know, I haven't been feeling well the last month. It was difficult for me to read, but boy, my Haaretz, they that I read my Haaretz. Of course, that there's no question about it that somebody was talking to me yesterday about the three women in the Jerusalem Post. Who are the three women of the Jerusalem Post? Carolyn Click, Evelyn Gordon, Sarah Honig. Great. You win. You're all good. Tell me out. I was hard put to find three men. So that was just to make you feel a little better today, you understand. All right, there is Michael Freund, and there must be a few others. So here, what bursts out upon us is Pras Yisrael, the Israel Prize for Art this year, has been
awarded, though now it's in question, to Yigal Tumarkin. As soon as I heard that on the radio, without having read a thing, I began to shudder. Here is a man who has a sculpture of a pig wearing tefillin, so difficult for me even to say it. A man who said when he sees religious Jews, he knew exactly what Hitler had in mind. And for 30 years, his ugly mouth has attacked everything Jewish. And this man is going to be given the Israel Prize for Art. It's unbelievable. I thought that Limor Livnat had simply lost it. I think she is losing it. Don't we have any self-respect? So then, of course, what do you find in Haaretz? Art for art's sake. You have to separate the art from the artist. You have to look at the object. Oh, no, no. Torah says you don't separate the art from the artist. The artist is the one who gives meaning and significance and sanctity and beauty to the work of art. Zekeli Zanvehu, Abishol says, be like him, Rachum Bechanon, then it's a work of art. Betzel Kel Hayita. What do you mean separate art from the artist? The artist can be a chaleria, but take a look at the art. No, we can't do that. Torah has taught us that that's not the way we look at it. If the artist is a manuvel, if he's a rosher, then his art is absolutely valueless. But chofesh habitui, you understand, freedom of expression. We're going to talk about freedom of expression in a minute. If we didn't have that tzara, so there's a recurrent tzara that we have all the time. Daniel Birnbaum is the one who wants to make sure that every Jew in Eretz Yisrael is going to hear Wagner. All right? There was a beautiful article in the Jerusalem Post around Hanukkah time where he talks about Birnbaum and Wagner. Birnbaum, by the way, authored a book together with Edward Said. Erev Shining Gehenim, all right? Edward Said, one of the great Sonei Yisrael of our generation. And he authored a book with him. And Birnbaum even says over there that Hitler planned the destruction of the Jews in Wagnerian terms. But that doesn't make any difference. Wagner is beautiful. You separate the work of art from the artist. Torah says otherwise. You can separate the work of the art from the artist. Because whatever is in the artist goes into that work of art. And there in that article, I think it was by a fellow named Alexenberg, he said a beautiful, beautiful word. What a beautiful word. Yavon. Greece. Yud, Vav, Nun. Greece. That's beauty. That's Yefet. But you know how we look at it? Put a tzaddik in front of the Yavon, and you know what it becomes? Zion. The tzaddik is the one that brings beauty into something, not the ugliness of an ugly person. So we had Birnbaum, we have him, I'm sure we're going to have him again. If he takes time out from visiting Arafat in the Mukhtar over there in Ramallah, he'll come and he'll try to play Wagner for us again. And then, of course, we had the beautiful exhibition of art in Sweden. I understand. What are you talking about? The Mechabelet mit Abedet flowing around in a blood. So there were those who attacked Zvi Meisel, the ambassador. What are you talking about? You barbarian. You don't understand what art is. You don't see what art is. Unbelievable. You don't understand what art is. Freedom of expression. So I'll tell you the following. Listen very carefully to what I'm going to say. So you don't quote me incorrectly. What would happen if? I'm just setting up a very, this is just setting up something very theoretical. Perish the thought.
What happens if I would write an article, and if they would finally publish it, let's say they publish it in the Jerusalem Post. The article would be the beauty of a picture of Rabin in an SS uniform. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What are you talking about? What meaning, what significance, what import, what absolute beauty. And you know what I do? In my article, I would quote from the New Historians, Benny Morris of Ben-Gurion University, Ilan Papa of Haifa University, Avi Schleim from London, he's in Oxford, yeah, all right. And I would describe all of the terrible atrocities that they claim were done by Tzal, all Sheker, by the way. I would quote from them, what an ugly thing we did. And who served as an important member of that Tzal? Yitzhak Rabin. But more than that, for 30 years they're telling us that we're bloodthirsty, evil occupiers. Who is the commander-in-chief in the Six-Day War? Who's the father of the occupation? Yitzhak Rabin. And therefore, a picture of Rabin in an SS uniform is an extremely beautiful piece of art. What do you think they would do with me? What do you think they would do with me? I say, most probably, they would exile me, ship me off to a Greek island someplace, and lock me up forever. But I will claim chofesh habitui, I have a right to express myself. What's it different than expressing admiration for a woman who blew herself up in Maxim? What's different than expressing how despicable I think the Jewish people are through the works of Yigal Tumarkin? How different is it from the freedom of expression of Wagner? Also freedom of expression. So you know what you learn from this? There's no question about it. I don't think there's a soul in this country that would come to my defense. So you know what it therefore means? This whole talk of freedom of expression is one big lie. One big lie. If you are expressing what they want you to express, then there's freedom of expression. But if you're expressing something that they don't want you, by the way, I think I could make such a good, I could really make a case for it. I may even get people on my side. It's a pretty good case. But Torah is different. Torah has a completely different approach to art. If it hurts, it's not art. If we're going to use, if the term that's used is art, regardless of what it is beautiful because chofesh habitui, freedom of expression, why does Torah have halachas about expression? Rechilus, lashon hara, machlokes, sinna, azer, azer. The stones for the Mizbeach that are cut with metal may be the most beautiful stones of all, but they are rejected by Torah. Rejected by Torah. For a mitzvah to be fulfilled the way it should be fulfilled, you need a beautiful person holding a lulav and an esrog. That's what you need. For a sefer Torah to be kosher, not only its beauty, but there has to be an inner beauty. It has to be written lishmo. We have to be careful of any ideas about beauty that come from the outside world before we take them into our house. We have to test them. We have to look at them. We have to study them. Is it nothing more than an external veneer of beauty that is really covering up absolutely ugliness from within? Or is there truly beauty there? If it's really beautiful, we can have it. We can benefit. God has never prohibited us beauty, but we have a different definition. We have a different definition of beauty. I think the Jews, Pashut, we have to know it. And we dare not fall into this trap of, oh my, beauty for beauty's sake, what a magnificent work of art. Magnificent, magnificent, it makes no difference. The one who created it is an ugly person, then that piece of art is ugly. Zekeli v'anvehu elekeyovi v'aromemenu. So you know how I learn pshat now? The person who's capable of saying Zekeli is the one, this is my God, he's the one who can create something of the anvehu, who can create something beautiful. And to fully create something that is beautiful, it has to be the kind of beauty that does not tear us away from our moorings of all generations. It also has to be inextricably intertwined with Elokei Ovi V'Aromenenu. Art that is not Zekeli and not Elokei Ovi is not Anvehu at all. The real art is Zekeli V'Anvehu. That's it.